SD File, the Ultimate Chargers Podcast with Nate Lundy.
Welcome into the podcast. My name is Nate Lundy. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen. A lot on tap for the podcast this week as we kick things off. We'll get to our big interview in just a moment. Talk about the big storylines as training camp and the preseason are underway and the start of the regular season is just a couple of weeks away. Plus, we'll do Around the League with the coach, Brian Billick from NFL Network, as we will every week, a chance to visit with the coach. And we'll close things out this week's podcast with Overtime, a six pack of questions. This week's guest, Andrew Siciliano of the NFL Network and DirecTV's Red Zone channel. But it all gets started with the big interview next.
The big interview.
All right, it is time for our big interview as we visit with the Chargers, find out how things are going as we roll through the preseason. And joining us from BoltBeat.com, Matt Pagels. Matt, thanks for making some time. Let's start with the obvious story. As of when we're recording this, the standoff continues between the Chargers and Joey Bosa. What's your take on it? What's your stance? I suppose people kind of have to pick one side of the fence or the other, but give us your take.
That's the problem. You said it right there, that it's dividing fans. It's been a good offseason. They made key additions. They had what arguably was Tom Telesco's best draft. Now with this Bosa debacle, the saga that's going on, it's tearing apart what was a good offseason. So in my opinion, I was on Bosa's side, okay? I understand it's a business, and then you have people saying, hey, the guy's never played it down in the NFL before, okay? I understand that. But you got to give the guy his money. It's a player the Chargers have wanted since last October. They essentially had the number one overall pick because the first two quarterbacks, everyone knew they were going. So, but what came out yesterday, it's been a dark cloud over us fans over here. I feel like the Chargers, it's embarrassing for me. I could probably vouch for all our fans because we're the laughing stock of the NFL right now. Everyone's going to be kept asking, oh, Bosa this, Bosa that. You know, I feel bad for the fans that even bought Bosa jerseys. But with what the Chargers did yesterday, while I'm not condoning what they did was right, but the fact that is that they lowballed him to begin with, but now they gave him 85%, which was what, the second most cash behind quarterback Carson Wentz in this calendar year, and he declined it. So now it doesn't look good on Bosa's side or his agent for that matter, which they sent out a statement yesterday saying we're doing what's best for our client. So now I'm indifferent because if it's about the money, he got what was a good deal, yet it wasn't right away. But I mean, the guy, if you love the game of football, you're going to get your 17 mil. So 85% is what, around $14 million? You're going to get the three deferred for the next year? That I find that a good deal. But now it's looking like he just doesn't – I don't know, maybe he just doesn't want to be a Charger. No one's talking about it, but maybe he just really doesn't want to play for the team.
And, Matt, let me ask you this, because one of the things that we see when we watch it, when folks look outside of San Diego at the team is, you know, you look at the fact that, you know, Philip Rivers went through this. There's obviously the, you know, the infamous time with Eli Manning. It seems to be that this kind of trouble is attracted to this team. Why is that?
I hear you right there. It's the organization. Hey, you can say the same thing for the way they let go of Eric Weddle, all-pro. Yep. He's been good to the community and, you know, one of the best players on the Chargers in a very long time. He was the leader of the defense, and the way they let him go, it's sad to see. So what scares me now is that, yeah, you had this Bosa issue, but you got to think in the future, players aren't going to want to sign here if they keep dealing with this stuff. They see what's going around. And yeah, there's different opinions from veterans and retired players on what Bosa should or shouldn't do. But going back to Philip Rivers and Gates and all those holdouts, letting Vincent Jackson go, there's always seems like maybe it's ego or stubbornness or the Chargers wanting to do things their way. But in terms of this Bosa deal, they haven't had a top five pick since 2004, I believe, when they did get Rivers. And the new CBA in 2011 came out, should have made it easier for rookies to sign. So they're not used to that. They want to do things their own way, defer the payments and whatnot. So it's tough to be rooting for a team where the organization has been letting down the fans.
Matt Pagel's with us from boltbeat.com as we talk about the Chargers here on the podcast. Matt, before we get to the play actually on the field, the other question that's out there obviously is how the fans have been in the organization, et cetera, when it comes to this looming idea that the Chargers may not be in San Diego for much longer, that they could move up the road to Los Angeles. What's that vibe been enabling people to actually focus on this team and not necessarily about the future of the team?
You know, that's been another dark cloud that's been hovering over the fans' heads. I feel like last year, the whole Bosa situation, the organization, everything kind of plays into one hole because the stadium voting is coming up in November, and it just doesn't – the vibe is negative. We have to change that and move past this situation so you can look forward to that voting and hopefully, you know – It passes and they get a new stadium, but it's tough. You got to think the players in their minds could be thinking they're playing in San Diego for the last time. And from reading a lot of comments on certain articles and whatnot, and what the fans feel, they don't clearly don't want them to move to Los Angeles. And I don't think Los Angeles wants them. They'll be second fiddle to the Rams. So, I mean, it's going to be tough to play with that idea in their head. But I feel more – well, I did until this is going on, but I felt more positive that the Chargers, especially having one more year leased and finally getting money and the fact that the Rams are there now, I feel like it should be – I wouldn't say easier, but a better chance that the Chargers could end up staying in San Diego for the long haul.
All right, Matt, let's get to the actual play on the field. Is there a vibe that maybe this is sort of the Phillip Rivers last stand? How many more seasons do they think that he will be at the helm? And, you know, is there a sense of urgency to take advantage of that?
Well, yeah, he just signed a four-year, correct me if I'm wrong, contract extension last year. He's 34 years old, but he is playing at a high level. But if his offensive line doesn't help him stand upright, he's going to take more hits and his career is going to end quicker. So, but he's still doing, let's put it this way, I would have Phil Rivers on my team right now than a lot of other quarterbacks in the league. He always gives them a chance to win. But now it's getting towards the end of his career where he needs help. He needs help around his team. They drafted Melvin Gordon. I'm not calling him a bust. I actually like his potential this year to rebound. But you got the running game going. They got another pass catcher in Travis Benjamin and Hunter Henry. Keenan Allen is turning heads around in camp so far. So hopefully he carries that in the regular season and as long as he can stay healthy. Gates, yeah, he's up there in age, but he's still reliable. And again, you got it's the laws of the offensive line. That's what people are arguing. They should have, wow, why didn't we go with a tackle instead of Bosa? Well, you know, the game is won by the trenches and how you perform in the trenches. So offensive line, defensive line, they need help. They were on the worst run-stopping defenses in the league last year. They allowed so many runs over 20-plus yards. The secondary is good with Jason Verrett and whatnot. They have a good core. They're young. And I know people are going to say, oh, they're rebuilding. They don't have a chance. They're going to finish last in the AFC West. I think four games last year they lost by more than a touchdown. So they're not a bad team, but yeah, they finished 4-12. So everyone's kind of overlooking that. So back to Phil Rivers, he's going to need help around, but if his line can keep him up, I feel like he's going to have a very good year. And hey, if this team stays healthy, they do have a chance in that tough AFC West.
And you want to talk about the offensive line. Obviously, that's going to affect how things go with Melvin Gordon. Is this going to be a sophomore slump? Is it going to be a sophomore breakout? What's your prediction for Gordon?
I know it sounds biased, you know, but I really think he's going to have a very, very good year. They drafted underrated fullback Derek Watt out of Wisconsin. It was Gordon's mate back there when he had that over 2,000-yard rushing season. They got Hunter Henry, and yeah, he's a dynamic tight end. And he was considered the all-around best tight end in the league last year. Didn't drop a pass, and he's been very well blocking so far in practices and in preseason games. So you take that around, and you have the offensive line. Another underrated signing is Matt Slauson, because they haven't had a center since Nick Hardwick to hold down the line. They've had Trevor Robinson and Chris Watt, who by Pro Football Focus were rated the two worst centers in the league around there. So you have Matt Swanson. You have a team that had 24 different offensive line combinations last year, five different centers the year before. They haven't had time to gel. And unfortunately, look what happened already. DJ Fluker is out for we don't know how long with a knee injury. And he's the results came back negative, so that's good. But as long as this line can gel, stay healthy, and they have a good center with Swanson, Gordon is bound to break through. We haven't seen his potential because every single game last season, it seemed like every time Gordon had the ball in his hands, he was stopped for a loss. So it's hard to blame all of it on Gordon. And then the bus label is that makes no sense. We got to see what he can do in year two. And I believe if this line can stay healthy, he has the talent to be a dominant running back.
And will they continue to mix in Danny Woodhead, or what do you think the balance will be?
Danny Woodhead will probably stay a lot on passing downs, especially if the Chargers fall behind a little. They'll be used in the field. You got to think too. Maybe put Woodhead and Gordon out there on the same downs, on the same snaps. And then you got Brandon Oliver, another really good running back who shined his rookie year, took over last year, and unfortunately he also got hurt. So they got a good change of pace backs. And Woodhead at 31 years old, going on 32 event soon. He's a key to Phil Rivers because it's awesome when you have a guy like him getting out open in the backfield and it's another passing option. So yeah, they'll probably mix those back and forth, but expect Gordon to get a good early start, especially with Rivers running some plays under center instead of the halfback draw. And that goes into Ken Wisenhunt, who was the Chargers offensive coordinator when they made the playoffs in 2013. Ryan Matthews had his best year that year. So it's all play calling, and it's all, I understand there's talent and stuff like that, clearly, but if you have the right pieces around you and they're pushing to help Gordon, I think he's going to do very well this year.
Easy stuff. Matt Pagels, covering the Chargers, does it for boltbeat.com. That's where you find his write-ups and everything. You want to keep track of what's going on in San Diego with the AFC West, you find it with Matt, boltbeat.com. Matt, appreciate the time. Thanks.
I appreciate it, Nate. Have a good one.
Stay tuned. We got the coach, Brian Billick, coming up next.
Around the league.
It is time for us to go around the league, and as we will do each week throughout the season, we're joined from the NFL Network. You find him on Twitter at Coach Billick. It is the coach, Brian Billick. And first of all, Coach, how's your off season been?
It's been great as usual. Too short, but it's time for football, so we'll crank this thing up.
It always feels like it's too short. Let's talk about some of the stories from the off season and even from training camp and beyond. A few interesting quarterback moves. So let's start here. First of all, what's your assessment of the Broncos quarterback situation and the decision Gary Kubiak's having to make?
Well, anytime you take a quarterback in the first round, obviously LA doing it with Jared Goff, and then Carson Wentz in Philadelphia, and then Paxton Lynch in Denver. At some point, you've got to know these guys are going to start. I mean, since Aaron Rodgers did it in 2005, and he's the poster child for those that say, okay, you shouldn't start a quarterback, let him sit in and learn behind somebody else. Well, with all due respect, he sat in behind Brett Favre. That's a Hall of Famer. And Carson Wentz and Jared Goff and Paxton Lynch, they're not sitting behind Hall of Fame. In my opinion, they ought to play. And it sounds like Paxton Lynch, particularly with a team like Denver, that's going to pack a great defense. They anticipate running the ball well. Why would you not start him?
And then when you go from Denver, let's stay in the West. Let's go to the NFC West. What about what Chip Kelly is dealing with in San Francisco with Gabbert, with Kaepernick? It feels like it's a very odd situation that he's trying to decide who his quarterback for 2016 is going to be.
Yeah, you know, look, the old adage is if you have two or three quarterbacks, you have no quarterback. I mean, it should be very clear-cut. And he may have already decided. I think there's still an upside for Colin Kaepernick. We'll see how he fits in the Chip Kelly system. You'd think it would be fabulous. Blaine Gabbert, I think we've seen, is a backup, a good, solid backup in this league. I don't know that you're going to be a championship-caliber club. Colin Kaepernick still has a little of that upside. But the hard thing will be that this roster is not a great roster right now. It's not a great defense. You know, you hope that Carlos Hyde can stay healthy and run the ball. The receiving core, they have some potential there, but I don't know they have the absolute go-to guy, and that includes their tight ends. Vance McDonald is kind of pedestrian. So I think the group that he's going to be working with, along with the defense that's clearly having to rebuild, I think there's going to be some challenges for Chip in San Francisco.
What about a positive quarterback story, at least from what we've seen in the preseason so far? And that's Robert Griffin III in Cleveland. A lot of folks feel like maybe we're starting to see the RG3 that we saw at the very beginning in Washington.
Well, you hope so, because obviously this guy has a lot of talent. If he can stay healthy, and that's a big if, that's something obviously everybody's going to watch to see, because they keep saying, we're going to let Robert Griffin be Robert Griffin. Well, when Robert Griffin was Robert Griffin, he was RG3, he got hurt. And so I'm looking for a guy that can he beat you from the pocket? Yeah, can he do the things outside? He's got potentially, and I'm hesitant to use that word because the old adage is in coaching, son, your potential is going to get me fired. But if there's some potential, it looks like Terrell Pryor has some upside in terms of the receiver. If indeed Josh Gordon can come back and be solid for them, if they can get that running game cranked up, then that's going to complement RG3 and give them a chance, obviously, to piece this thing together. And I don't think anybody expects them to be a playoff team, but they can be a good, solid, competitive team.
The buzz down in Dallas is, of course, all about Dak Prescott, and we know it's a limited sample size of preseason, but what were your thoughts on Prescott going into the draft, and are they coming to fruition?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the Dak Prescott, this is different than the first-round conversation, which is good. Because for the Dallas Cowboys, obviously with Tony Romo, it's all about keeping Tony Romo healthy. But if you can get and reach down into the fourth round like they did for Dak Prescott, this is a talented guy. A lot of people will equate his game a little bit in terms of Russell Wilson. Now, that you say that, people go, oh, boy, well, this guy needs to be your starter. I'm just saying that he's a later draft choice that's showing some potential. I did see an interesting comment from him in talking about how he feels like he's ready for whatever the NFL is going to throw at him, whether it's a vanilla defense or, as he said, a rocky road defense. I think I'm ready. Well, let's hold on that. I prefer to have a rookie quarterback know just enough to be afraid, because I love the bravado, but the difference that he'll see in the regular season versus the preseason, notwithstanding Tony Romo staying healthy. But obviously for Dallas, they've got the best of both worlds. If indeed he can be a serviceable backup, get a young quarterback that they can develop, you couldn't ask for more than your backup quarter in your backup quarter position.
The coach, Brian Billick, with us. You find him on Twitter, at Coach Billick, as we go around the league. Coach, let's talk about a couple of coaching changes. How do you think the young Adam Gase, and I always wind up feeling older when I see a head coach who's 30, but nonetheless, a young Adam Gase, how do you think he'll do in Miami?
Well, he's got it set up to do very well. I mean, he was brought in. He's the current quarterback whisperer. So he's going to come in, and Tannehill is going to be that next protege, that next quarterback. Indeed, can he transform this guy who's had a solid beginning in his career? That's how it's going to be judged, because the expectations in Miami are very high in terms of what they think they can do. Obviously, in that division, it's all about, can you supplant New England? I don't know if they're good enough to do that. So the next question is, are they good enough to be a wild card team? And that's a tall order in the AFC.
What about Doug Peterson in Philadelphia? What's your assessment of Peterson?
Well, he certainly brings the right pedigree in terms of having been a former player, being a part of successful teams with Andy Reid. He's certainly in a familiar situation. Let's go back and remember that Doug Peterson was brought in to be the quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles in Andy Reid's first year in 1999 to basically hold down the spot until Donovan McNabb could eventually take it over, which he did middle to late season. Now, that was a 5-11 team. He now is sitting on a team where he's got a couple quarterbacks, more than a couple. Sam Bradford, obviously, they paid all that money to. They went out and moved up and used a lot of assets to go get Carson Wentz. But I was up at their training camp, early in training camp, and had a chance to visit with Coach Peterson. And he and Howie Roseman, the general manager, seemed wholly committed to Carson Wentz not playing this year. Now, I don't know that that's going to happen. As I said, since Aaron Rodgers took over or was drafted back in 2005, 29 quarterbacks have been taken in the first round, and only a handful have not played in the first year. Only four, to be exact: Aaron Rodgers, Jason Campbell, Grady Quinn, and Jake Locker. Now, that's not an impressive list outside of Rodgers. So those that want to make the camp, well, maybe you shouldn't play your quarterback in the first year, hasn't turned out real well. So we're going to find out if Doug Peterson wants to emulate what he did for the for the Philadelphia Eagles and just kind of hold, be a placeholder until they can get Carson Wentz into the starting lineup.
As you look at the NFL over the course of the last year, certainly the last 8 or 9 months, Coach, we've seen, whether it's the Al Jazeera report, we've seen Deflategate, we've seen a number of things going on. Are we in jeopardy at all with the league of Roger Goodell, any of the decisions or anything that he's doing? Is it starting to hurt the image of the league when it comes to the fans?
Well, I don't think so, particularly when we're talking, it's kind of talking out of both sides of the mouth when the media wants to say, well, is Roger Goodell too tough? Is he too authoritarian, as the players and the union will say? But by the same token, the NFL can't suffer these black eyes. He's got to get it under control. And that's really what it's going to come down to. We just saw the recent situation in the Olympics with Ryan Lochte. And how it's so often it's not the act itself, it's the cover-up or the lack of taking responsibility for it that is much, much more difficult. And that's what Roger Goodell and the league are trying to do, to make sure that these players understand there's going to be an accountability. There's a red line in the sand. And if you cross it, you're going to be held accountable for it.
The coach, Brian Billick, with us. Last one for you, Coach. Give me a team that is going to surprise us, and it could be a team that we think isn't going to be very good, who's going to be better than expected, or a team that has high expectations that's going to underachieve.
Wow. Well, let's go with the positive on that. And you know, when we talk about this and the work I do for the NFL Network for at that time of year where everybody wants to talk about that same thing about who are the teams that are going to surprise us? And the criteria is, okay, let's begin with the teams that weren't in the playoffs last year.
Right.
Because obviously you got to see what the Carolina Panthers do. Washington Redskins, who I think are going to be pretty good. Can they get back in the playoffs? But a team that clearly needs to do well for their coach, but I think his position could be pretty good, is Jacksonville. Now, they need to be good because obviously Gus Bradley's only got 10 or 11 wins, 12 wins over the last 3 years. But you've got to love, at least in the preseason and certainly in the third year, Blake Bortles seems ready, along with, you know, that great receiving core with Allen Robinson and Allen Hurn. The tight end position is a solid one with Mercedes Lewis. Julius Thomas, who they brought in last year in free agency, could step up and have a big year for them. And obviously in the running game, getting Chris Ivory to go with E.J. Yeldon. They're going to have some offensive weapons. And, of course, Gus Bradley went out and drafted a bunch of defensive guys who they're going to play. They don't have to be great defense, but they got to be better. This could be a team in the AFC South that really could be wide open that makes their way into the playoffs.
And they're benefited, Coach, aren't they, by the division that they're in? Sometimes the geography around you benefits you, that there isn't like a Patriots or a Carolina Panthers type team that they're trying to climb over either.
Yeah, and I regrettably, we always will start the season off and, okay, what coaches are on the hot seat and well, that division's on the hot seat because every single one of those coaches, whether it be Chuck Pagano in Indianapolis, the expectations with a healthy Ryan Leaf, whether down on Mike Mularkey, all but a first year, you go, how can a first-year coach be on the hot seat? Well, let's remember what happened in Jacksonville where he went 1 year and got fired, the expectations that Marcus Mariota is going to be better, and obviously down in Houston, they went out and spent the big money on a quarterback that the Denver Broncos said they didn't want to spend the money on, and Brock Osweiler. Brock Osweiler's got to come through for Billy O'Brien, or it could be a problem for him. So I think that whole division of coaches is on a hot.
I say it every single year. You're a smarter football fan if you spend some time with the coach, Brian Billick. He's on Twitter, at Coach Billick. Coach, look forward to visiting with you again throughout the season. Thanks for the time.
Sounds great. It'll be fun.
Coming up next, it will be time for Overtime, a six-pack of questions, rapid-fire style, with the NFL Network's Andrew Siciliano. Overtime is next.
Overtime.
It is time for Overtime. That means we got a six-pack of questions, because what else do you do during overtime but make another trip to the bar and grab a six-pack so that you can enjoy it? This week, our guest in Overtime from the NFL Network is Andrew Siciliano. Andrew, how are you?
Nate, how are you?
I'm doing very well, my friend. You ready for a six-pack of questions here?
Are they alcohol-free?
Well, they are alcohol-free, just in case you've got to go in front of the camera here in a moment.
Good.
All right.
Just double-check. Go ahead.
Let's start here. Question number one. Which rookie quarterback is going to start first, Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, or Paxton Lynch?
Paxton Lynch.
And why is that?
Jared Goff might be my other answer. I think it no doubt Case Keenum is going to be the starting quarterback for the Rams out of the gate. They have two difficult division games right out of the gate, so you're not going to see Goff, I don't think, in September. Paxton Lynch, as of our taping, Nate, still has a shot, if he performs well in week three of the preseason, to get the starting job, as absurd as that sounded a couple of weeks ago. And I think Paxton Lynch very well could be the two behind Trevor Siemian. And Trevor Siemian, somewhat unproven. That would put Paxton Lynch in a great position.
All right. Question number two. Do you think Ezekiel Elliott is going to break Tony Dorsett's 1977 rookie rushing record for the Cowboys of 1,007 yards?
Yes.
In what week?
Well, you need to average 66 yards, roughly, I believe, or 65 or something like that, a week to get to 1,000. So do the math. I say he looks like a 1,200-yard back.
Yeah, I think so, too. I'm with you on that one. All right, question number three. Do you think that Tom Brady's suspension is going to mean the end of the Patriots' run at the top of the AFC East?
Absolutely not. Call me except in December when they win the division.
All right, question number four. Will this intriguing Jacksonville Jaguars team, led by a defense they've been rebuilding, do you think they make the playoffs?
I'm going to say no, but I'm going to say they make a run for it and look like a 9-7 team. I'm still not entirely sold, but I'm excited. When the schedule came out in April, I said Green Bay on the road week one at Jacksonville was your sneaky good game of September.
As you look at Cleveland, are we seeing the resurrection of Robert Griffin III?
Yes. The question is, how long will the life be once resurrected? He certainly looks good in the preseason. It is still the preseason. Pump your brakes, Dak Prescott fans. RG3 has proven he could play and win in this league. Can he do it as a drop-back passer? Can Hugh Jackson truly, truly give him sustained success? I don't know. I mean, the right side of it off, well, right tackle's an issue. They have some weapons offensively, but blocking and tackling still will be an issue, which doesn't always bode well for the quarterback. Don't be shocked if they are in the number one overall discussion next year. Maybe not at number one, but at least trying to trade up to get a certain quarterback from the ACC, who for the time being shall remain nameless because he's an underclass.
Let me do a follow-up to question number five. Do you think RG3 ever makes it back to the Pro Bowl?
Well, Teddy Bridgewater made the Pro Bowl last year, and I like Teddy, but he only had like 14 touchdown passes. The way people drop out of the Pro Bowl, I'll never say never for anybody making the Pro Bowl.
All right, last question from our six-pack in overtime with NFL Network's Andrew Siciliano. Do you believe by this time next year we will be referring to the Las Vegas Raiders?
I would say, because it's Vegas and we're playing the odds, that it is slightly better than 50-50 that we will. However, never underestimate the likelihood of an iconic franchise staying home with a last-second deal.
I have said that I'd never want to see a city lose their team, but given that I'm in Denver with the AFC West, it could be kind of fun with the Raiders in Vegas. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Nate, a man of your fame and your needs, you know, I can't imagine that you need a Raiders game to hop on a $79 one-way flight to Vegas.
As long as you're going to meet me there. It's Andrew Siciliano from the NFL Network, part of Overtime with our six-pack of questions for this week. Andrew, thanks.
Yes, sir.
And there you have it. That's how the Overtime works, a six-pack of questions for a different analyst each week. And it also wraps up our podcast for this week. Thanks for being a part of it. We'll talk to you soon.
This has been a Sports Joe production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsjoe.com.